Thank you, Professor Will, for the project, for all that we've been working on and all that we've done on these handbooks for officials. I remember the first time when I was trying to examine administration, and a friend of mine, James Geis, showed me the first handbook that I encountered, and I was very excited because for the first time I had a window into the world of the yamen, or the official office for a Chinese official. And at first I thought, this is great. Now I know how it actually works. I know how they deal with the details of administration. I know how they deal with the clerks that are always trying to cheat them, or other problems with local elites who would want to apply pressure on them. But even as I read that first handbook that I encountered, I was aware of a problem, which was that this was a very static picture. It was a picture at one point in time. And was it really a good way to understand the office, for example, for the duration of the Ming Dynasty? And that bothered me quite a bit, but I couldn't do anything about it at that time, so I kept on working. And as I began to look at the literature surrounding the handbooks, I encountered a book on local government under the Qing from the 1960s, done by Qu Tongzhu, who used a lot of these handbooks to develop a description of local administration in the Qing. But I noticed as I read through it that it also was a very static picture. And so I began to see perhaps the limitations of looking at handbooks that way. They were useful, but it was real questions about how did administration develop, and do the handbooks tell us anything about change in administration as opposed to the static picture? Well, I worked with the handbooks for magistrates, and there were too many of them. But as I was reading one called the Zhipu, which was produced at the very end of the Ming, I got to the end of it and found appended to it a handbook about these prefectural judges, the Tuiguan, produced in 1639. And this was the only handbook that I had encountered about administrative duties of this prefectural judge. And so I thought, well, maybe here's a chance to test this idea about whether the handbooks will tell us about change. And I thought it quite odd that in 1639 we had the first administrative handbook for Tuiguan, even though they had existed since 1370 at least. And why this late in the dynasty was somebody finally bothering to write about the problems of being a Tuiguan? So the first thing I did to try to solve this problem is I went to the other materials that we had collected for the bibliography that concerned Tuiguan. And the first thing I discovered was that there were case books or judicial opinions. There were three volumes, also from the last decades of the Ming Dynasty. Well, I looked at the handbook, and indeed, there was a substantial portion of the handbook that concerned itself with being a judge and with judicial decisions. There were actually three sections. The first section concerned how to hold court, how to establish one's presence as a judge. A second section had to do with the writing of judicial opinions, the variety of different things that a Tuiguan, a prefectural judge, would have to write on. But then there was another section that was very curious and very different. This section wrote about how to be an assistant to another official, particularly the regional inspector, who was a provincial level censorial official, the Xunnan Yushi, how to be his assistant, and particularly how to be his assistant in evaluating all of the officials for the entire province in which they were working. And I thought this rather odd. So I thought, how am I going to find out about this? And what I figured out was that I better go and see what I could determine about the nature of the office of Tui Guan. And those who work on the materials will be glad that I've done this to find out how it indeed developed. So I went and initially without many resources and without the electronic searching, I couldn't do very much. I tried it about 5 years ago and couldn't get very far. But now some of the Ming Shilu, the veritable records of the Ming and that sort of document are now searchable. I could go search for Tui Guan and see what happened. And I began to find examples of how the office changed. And so I want to tell you a little of that story so that I can now put that handbook in context. And I think it will tell us something about the nature, at least of this handbook and perhaps about others as well. So the first thing I found, well, the first thing I had to determine was where did the office come from? The office itself dates from the 9th century, from the end of the Tang Dynasty. And in that period, there were military commissioners who began to exercise territorial control as military commissioners first, and later many people referred to them as military governors. And under their administration, they established this office of Tui Guan as a judge to hear legal cases, to specialize in hearing of cases. In the succeeding period, the Song Dynasty that we've already mentioned, the local territorial administration was shifted from this military governor to a civilian-run administration. But as they did so, they kept the office of Tui Guan in several different levels of government as a judge, specifically concentrating on hearing legal cases. That was perpetuated through the Southern Song. It was picked up by the Mongols in their prefectural office in particular, the Lu or the Lufu, and it continued again as an official primarily concerned with an official with judicial affairs. And so when the Ming was founded in 1368, they basically inherited this tradition. And we have a record recorded several places, particularly in I looked in the what's called the Da Ming Huidian, which is a description, supposedly, of the institutions of the Ming dynasty. And in the Da Ming Huidian, there is a passage that talks about this, drawing upon what was called the Da Ming Ling from 1370, thereabouts. And it reads as follows. Murder is a serious matter to which the ancients attended. In every prefecture should be established one prefectural judge, Tui Guan, to focus on handling judicial matters and not to participate in other government business. Then the responsibility for it will have somewhere to rest and people will not have a feeling of injustice. So the description then says that it's supposed to be solely judicial matters that this official is supposed to concern himself with. Then in the veritable records, again, there's another record, which says that the prefectural judge is the one who decides suits and legal cases for the entire prefecture. And it goes on to say that the prefect is responsible, but if he is to do a good job, he needs a good prefectural judge to hear the legal cases. So at the beginning of the Ming, at least in its design, the prefectural judge was to be solely a judicial official. And as I began to look further in documents, and particularly those sort of honorary, good official sorts of records, there were indeed quite a number that cited the judicial responsibilities as the reason that certain officials over time were to be honored and to be remembered. But as I began to look further, the picture got a little different. And I discovered that there were also honoring of these judges for not just judicial work, but also for administrative work. And that began to raise some questions. What was going on? And then as I read a little further, I encountered a description that says, no, they are allowed to be assigned some administrative work, usually within the prefecture, by the prefect. A little later on, I encountered a debate at court where somebody complained and said, the administrative duties are getting so great for these officials that the judicial duties are being neglected. we should issue a prohibition on administrative duties. Obviously, that didn't take because several years later, I encountered a man who was assigned by the Xunfu to, I want you to take charge of repairing the wall of this county, the defensive wall around the county. That's your job. And so it was with no surprise that I again encountered in 1461 another complaint about the balance between these administrative duties and the judicial duties. So already we can see that the job of Tui Guan was beginning to evolve in the dynasty. Now I thought to myself, if this kind of evolution, the job must have gotten more complicated. How come we don't have an administrative handbook now to describe the new problems that the Tui Guan is facing? And then I thought for a moment, well, they're adding a few responsibilities about building things, and actually, if a Tui Guan wanted to find out about how to do it, there actually is a literature already in existence of advice for magistrates who sometimes had to do the same thing. So the reason we don't have at that period a particular handbook designated for the Tui Guan is because the knowledge he needed was available in handbooks that we would generally consider being for the magistrates. Well, things didn't stop there. The provincial officials began to find that they also needed help. At the founding of the Ming, at the provincial level, originally they had three offices with full staffs. So that's the provincial administration office, the Buzhengshi, the surveillance office, the Anchashi, and then there was a military office, the Duzhihuishi. And all that was fine, but at the same time, in the middle of the 15th century, the court began to appoint two officials to oversee administration at the provincial level. And I'm thinking particularly of the grand coordinator, the Xunfu, and the regional inspector, whom I've already mentioned, the Xunaiyushi. The problem for those officials is that they began to acquire a lot of responsibilities, but they had minimal staff. And so they began to take some of the responsibilities that landed on them and turn them around and assign them to the prefectural judge. Now, why the prefectural judge? They had many officials that they could assign. The prefectural judge was actually the junior of four officials at the prefectural level. We had the prefect, the zhifu, the tongzhi, the vice prefect, the tongpan, the assistant prefect, and then we had the tui guan, the lowest of them all. Well, the zhifu, it would be very hard to assign things to a zhifu because he had broad general responsibility for the entire prefecture. And so it would be very hard to give him a task that would draw him away from that burden of administration. It was very hard to do that. And for the other two, they shared broad aspects of administration under the prefect. So it was very hard to task them. But the Tui Guan had just these judicial duties, supposedly, and so perhaps it was easier to pull him away for a period of time from his judicial duties, to give him an assignment. So I've already mentioned an assignment perhaps to build something, to oversee construction of something. But there were many other possible assignments. For example, when you had a county and the county magistrate left, somebody had to take care of it. Well, it so happened that the rank of a prefectural judge was the same as a county magistrate. So it was very tempting to assign a prefectural judge to go and be acting magistrate. So you can encounter that frequently throughout the records. This is towards the end of the 15th century, going into the 16th century. Very common. And there were even instances when this prefectural judge was asked to be acting prefect, well above his station. So these are the sorts of things that provincial officials were putting on them. And this generated, of course, as these always do, a complaint. In 1488, so fairly early on as this was happening, there was an exchange that's in the veritable records between a censor, Ma Wensheng, and Wang Shu, who was minister of personnel. But what Ma Wensheng has to say is very interesting. He says, among all the grand coordinators, the regional inspectors, and officials in the provincial administration, military surveillance commissions, there are many who often take the prefectural judges who are rendering judgments and send them on assignment to the capital or assign them some other duty. They sometimes do not return to their post for half a year, and there's no one to hear the cases. So obviously here we have yet a further development in an administrative role for these judges. And here was the complaint about it. And indeed, Wang Shu, as Minister of Personnel, supported, again, a prohibition, which did not happen. It did not take. They kept on using them this way. And so now, again, I have to look again. We again have an expansion of duties, broader than before. Originally, the administrative matters were the prefecture. Now you could be assigned duties, sometimes even tax collection, overseeing the gabelle, the salt monopoly for the whole province, might be one of the assignments. But again, my question was, if a prefectural judge now assigned these new duties, if he was going to do them, would he have any information about how to carry out these affairs? And by and large, again, this information was available in other existing handbooks. And particularly the role of acting magistrate, obviously, and general administration would be available in the magistrate handbooks that were beginning to appear at that time. Now, we had, when we began to investigate the handbooks for officials in the Ming Dynasty, one of the things that we found was that there was a great expansion of them at the beginning of the early 16th century. And in the book that I've done on the development of local administration, I've pointed out that the job of magistrate got harder at that period, and I thought that was the primary reason for the expansion of handbooks. I'm now going to revise that statement somewhat, because I'm now finding that the job of Tui Guan, the prefectural judge, also got harder at that period. So what we are considering as magistrate handbooks and the expansion of magistrate handbooks may also represent interest on the part of the prefectural judges in advice about how to carry out affairs. So I would say that it's now both, no longer just the magistrates. Well, we still haven't solved the problem of my handbook at the end of the Ming. So I continued looking at what kind of things could happen. And what I discovered was that while the judicial work of these prefecture judges continued, and we know that because of certainly the case books at the end of the period, that the job of the regional inspector, the Xunnan Yushi, also involved review of cases, and particularly difficult cases. And so I began to find references to these regional inspectors without much of a staff would go around, and as they toured the province, I found several examples where they would arrive in a prefectural judge's court, and they would actually listen to some of the debates about the judgment for this particularly difficult case. And there were examples of regional inspectors who found that perhaps the prefectural judge's command of the law was better than their own. Or in one case, one great case, the regional inspector came to hear the decision, and then he reviewed the case, and he came to a different conclusion. And the prefectural judge, who's very young, okay, disagreed with him. And the regional inspector said, no, 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 this is the way it is. The prefectural judge said, no, 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 I insist this is not the way it is. And they very much got the loggerheads. And then we finally read in the record that once the regional inspector had a moment to think about it again, he said, you know, you're right. And so once he admitted that the prefectural judge had done a better job than he had, he said to him, well, you know what? I've got a difficult case over in the neighboring prefecture that I have to go hear. I want you to go with me. And so what we see developing, and this is in the middle of the 16th century, is that certain regional inspectors will identify a particularly capable prefectural judge and ask him to tour with him around the province, taking him away from his post, and tour with him around the province to deal with those particularly nasty cases that nobody knew how to resolve. And so in this way, the prefectural judge moved from just being a person within the system to becoming an assistant to the regional inspector, who himself really had no staff to bring with him. And so in this way, we again begin to see a change. Now, to understand how this is working, it might be useful to understand what happened with cases in Ming China, particularly murder cases. They tended to go the farthest. And I was very fortunate as I was going through that somebody that's fairly famous actually talked about this a little bit. There's a moment when somebody's sending a friend off to be a prefectural judge, and he says, well, first of all, the cases that the county magistrate cannot resolve are sent to the prefect. The ones the prefect can't resolve, of course, get sent to the prefectural judge. But when it came to murder cases, and I want to find this, we have an example from Hai Rui, a very famous official, and he was writing about a case on which he had to he was asked to express an opinion, and I just want to tell you give you an idea of how this case went. There are plenty of other examples out there, but this is the one that I enjoyed. It began, first of all, with some family complaining that a reported accidental death was actually a murder. And that report went all the way to the provincial level. And so the provincial surveillance commissioner got the report. And so he said, all right, so it happened in that county. So he sent the matter down to the county to be tried, to be investigated. So the county magistrate tried the case, got the people together, and said indeed there was a crime, and so he sent it back up. Now, because it was a murder case, it naturally went next to the prefecture. The prefecture reviewed it and said, yes, that's a good judgment. And so they handed it back up to the provincial surveillance commissioner. Well, he wasn't quite sure. This is a fairly serious case. So he decided to pick, a prefectural judge over in a neighboring prefecture. And he sent the case, complete with all the witnesses and everybody, sent the case to him to review. The prefectural judge decided that the determination was too serious. And so he changed the determination and sent it back up. The commissioner then sent that to the regional inspector, the Xunyaoyushir, who reviews the next level up. The Xunyaoyushir said, forward it on to the capital, where it goes to the Yushitai, to the censorate, and to the Lifayuan, to the Court of Judicial Review. The Li Fa-yuan said, no, we're not done with this yet. And they sent it back down the chain, where it ended up back with the regional inspector, who wanted to get a whole bunch of people together to view it. And they said, this is very hard on the witnesses, you know, who've been traveling around this entire time. And so finally, they sent it down to Hai Rui, of all people, as a county magistrate, to rehear it. And that's the end of his report, because that's where, for him, it went further. So are you getting some idea of how legal cases could move around in the system, and particularly the ones that had some sort of problematic issue? And so it was these sorts of cases that the regional inspector wanted help with. And so the regional inspector recruited these prefectural judges to be his assistant. Well, this served them very well. But the regional inspector, as I mentioned a moment ago, also had one other very, very large responsibility, and that was that he was to evaluate all the officials in the province, and he was to provide a report on them. So it was quite natural, I think, for some smart regional inspector to decide that his very capable prefectural judge, who was helping him with legal cases, might also be a very useful assistant for the evaluation of officials. I suspected that might happen, and indeed, as I continued my search for how things were developing, I found in 1629 a memorial by a man named Liu Zongzhou, who some of you may know. And he's talking about, the memorial's about effective administration, but particularly about the selection of prefectural judges. And what he says is, we have to be very careful about the selection of prefectural judges. This is what he's telling the Ministry of Personnel that's doing the selections. We have to be very careful with selection precisely because both the Grand Coordinator and the Regional Inspector were using them as assistants to carry out investigations in advance of evaluations. So here we have hard evidence that indeed this was happening. And here we have the beginnings of a new development in the life of the poor prefectural judge. And then, as I continue reading, I encountered, again for the very late Ming, there's a man named Qi Biaojia, who's very well known in other contexts. But Qi Biaojia, very fortunately, left for us a whole collection of his official correspondence. It was never really published. Some of his materials were published, but he served as a tuiguan, as a prefectural judge. I was very happy. In Fujian, he served as acting magistrate. He did all the fun kind of things that one does. And there's this big monster collection in Beijing Tuzhuguan, in the National Library of China. And I fortunately had time, and I was flipping through it. And the next thing I know, I'm reading a piece of correspondence with the Xunnan Yuzhi, with the regional inspector, in which he describes a problem of evaluation. So here I had hard evidence, not only that somebody was complaining about it and somebody was saying it was happening, here I had hard evidence that it was actually happening. Now I have to go back to the poor prefectural judge who now has another major administrative responsibility. And would he have anywhere to go to learn about how do you prepare for an evaluation? And in this case, the answer is no. And so what I would propose to you is that we see our first administrative handbook specifically for prefectural judges at the moment when they assumed a duty that was not covered in the existing literature in handbooks for officials. And so now I can understand why. So that the memorial was 1629. So we're talking about the turn of the 17th century is when this occurs. We know from the preface to the manual that I talked about, Shi Zicheng is the author, that he collected the materials in 1632. It was published finally in 1639. And so it matches up exactly with this period, that he observed what was happening with the Tuiguan, and that there was a demand for this kind of information. And so he prepared this handbook specifically to address the changes in administration. So if I come back to my original question, what do these handbooks and their publication and the timing of their publication and their contents, what does it tell us? And I think it's no longer just a static picture. It's necessary, again, to go back and reconstruct some of the development of any particular office or any particular administrative duty that's assigned in an office. But when I did it in this one case, since it was just the one handbook, it made it quite easy, much easier to investigate. But what it reveals is that many of these handbooks were probably produced for a reason, and that reason had a lot to do with change in administration, not with just a static picture. Now, I haven't talked long enough.
As you want, you can go on if you want.
Because I find that's pretty much what I found, and I think it's actually very problematic for the bibliography because now we have to ask the same question of all of those books? No, we're not going to do that.
No, in some ways, yes. No,
sure. I know we should, but it's not possible.
Handbooks are only part of what of the picture.
And, indeed. Yeah. So that's what I have.